Welcome to the United Way of Southwest Michigan's 26 at 6 on News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is the show that brings you 26 different stories around Southwest Michigan in 26 weeks, every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Want to know more about the work of the United Way? Visit uwsm.org.
Welcome to United Way's 26 at 6. Tonight we're going to talk about food insecurity. And I welcome back to the studio, Rachel Wade. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Anna.
Nice to have you back.
It's fun. I'm glad to be back.
Before we get into what food insecurity is, we're going to talk a little bit about what we in the United Way and some of the other organizations know as ALICE. But before we talk about what ALICE is, I want to talk about who Rachel is.
Oh, so I'm sure your listeners are dying to
know. You've been on a few times, and I know that our listeners are listening every week, and so they've probably gotten to know you. Tell us a little bit about something that maybe we don't know. Did I just trip you up?
You did, because as most people who know me, I'm a pretty open book.
Yes, you are.
There's not many things that people who know me don't know about me. I suppose my intense love for Barry Manilow is something that would probably surprise people.
Yeah, how many times have you seen him?
8.
Yeah, that's a scary
thought. And I
could
tell you magical stories about everyone, but we'll move on.
And so you've been at United Way for how long?
10 years.
10 years. And what is your role at United Way?
I am the Vice President of Impact and Development.
Soon to be Vice President of
Strategic Direction.
There you go. We got to get used to saying that.
Yeah, I know.
So let's get into what ALICE is, because I know that it stands for something. So let's talk about that.
ALICE is an acronym that stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. It's really a way to quantify what a lot of people refer to as the working poor.
Okay.
So ALICE is a project, it's a data project that over a dozen states in the country have done an ALICE report to kind of quantify those folks who make too much money to qualify for assistance, but not enough money to be financially stable. And so the ALICE report really looks at a whole bunch of data, which is why you have me here talking about it.
Because
I love data.
Rachel really loves data.
No sarcasm in that statement at all.
The report, though, was generated by Rutgers University?
Correct. Okay. And this is actually the state of Michigan has had 2 ALICE reports now, and we're in the process of collecting and analyzing the data for a third. But as I said, over a dozen states in the country have this report because the federal poverty level is really not a good indication of the families in our community who are struggling financially. As I said, there's plenty of families who are above poverty, but still are just getting by or are struggling to just get by. We actually have more households in both Berrien and Cass County who live within this ALICE threshold than who live below poverty.
Interesting.
So what Rutgers University did was for every county in the state of Michigan, they identified this ALICE threshold. That's basically how much money does your household need to bring in order to just meet your basic needs. It wouldn't give you any wiggle room for emergencies or for saving or anything like that. But the absolute, the amount of money you would have to earn as a household in order to just meet your most basic needs.
So what's a most basic need?
Food, health care, housing, child care, transportation.
Okay.
Those things that you really have to invest your paycheck in order to live. And what they found pretty much across the board is that the ALICE threshold is actually about twice the federal poverty level. So we have, as I said, more families who live in between that poverty and ALICE line than we do living below poverty. And so what that means is kind of for our work and implications on the agencies that we work with, most agencies really want to help the most vulnerable, which is good. That's where we need to be focusing our resources. But those folks who live at the poverty line or below, There's actually a tremendous amount of resources for folks who meet poverty guidelines. There's child care assistance, there's food assistance, there's health care assistance. There's a lot of help for those folks who live below poverty. But if you're living, as I said, from the poverty line to the ALIS threshold, so for a family of four, the ALIS threshold between Berrien and Cass County, the average is an income of about $54,000 a year for a family of four, which, as I said, is about twice the poverty level. It's about $27,000 for a family of four. And so for those folks who live within the ALIS threshold, there's not a lot of support. They don't qualify for assistance. They can't go anywhere to get help. And so they're really, this is kind of a tired cliche, but they're really falling between the cracks because they don't know where to go and there aren't many options for them.
We're going to come and finish that conversation. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to United Way of Southwest Michigan's 26 at 6. And I'm speaking with Rachel Wade from United Way of Southwest Michigan. And we're talking the tonight's episode is about food insecurity, but we're really right now talking about ALIS and what the person looks like that ALIS defines. Rachel loves data, which is why this is a perfect show for her. So we're just getting into, do you know what the percents are in Berrien and Cass County of people that are falling into the ALIS?
Sure. In Berrien County, 22% of our households fall within that ALIS definition. So asset limited, income constrained, employed. So 22% of households in Berrien County, 29% of households in Cass County. So if you look between the two counties, that's about 20,000 households.
What's our population?
Between the two counties, it's about 207,000 people.
All right.
So 20,000 households are falling within that ALIS threshold. And what's really important, and the reason the ALIS data is important to use for a lot of really honest and difficult discussion, is what can agencies do with this data? So a lot of our nonprofit organizations, especially those who are receiving money from the government or who have kind of government regulations on how their programs work, they don't have a lot of control over who they serve, right? They may have to serve people who are at 100% of the poverty level or 150% of the poverty level, but their guidelines are dictated to them, which is fine. That's how it works in a lot of cases. But when you have these smaller food pantries, for example, maybe a church-based food pantry, who can set their own guidelines, their own eligibility criteria for who they serve, it's a really interesting conversation to say, all right, let's look at the ALIS threshold and maybe extend your eligibility criteria to those households who fall within the ALIS threshold, because food assistance is actually one of the easiest kinds of assistance to provide.
Right.
It's much more difficult to help a family with their child care or with their health care or with their transportation.
Right.
But food is really, really easy to address. And so if we have these small independent food pantries who are willing to serve people with a little bit higher level of income in this ALIS threshold, that could be the one thing that helps catapult this family into a higher level of financial security. As I said before, everyone wants to help the most vulnerable and the most needy, which is really important. But the most vulnerable and the most needy have a lot more options for assistance than these ALIS families do.
So why do you think families are in that category, that they're falling into that ALIS threshold? What's going on?
Yeah, the important thing about that acronym is asset limited, income constrained, employed. These are folks who are working, but they're not making a high salary. They could be making minimum wage. They could even be making a little bit more than minimum wage, but minimum wage isn't enough to actually provide for all of your needs. So in the state of Michigan, 62% of our jobs pay less than $20 per hour. And if we look at that ALIS threshold, even a single individual needs to make more than $20 an hour in order to meet their most basic needs.
So why did, we need to wrap up here in a moment, but why did, again, why did United Way get involved in this? Why is it important?
Because it's really important to help identify and quantify those folks who need help, but don't usually meet the requirements for other types of assistance.
Well, I want to thank you, Rachel. Our time goes fast here, but we're going to stay around tonight. We're going to start talking about food insecurities with our next guest. So I'd like to thank you, Rachel Wade from United Way of Southwest Michigan, for joining us this evening. And when we come back, I'll be continuing the conversation on food insecurity with Linda Stroll from Senior Nutrition Services, who is running a really great program to help combat the issue of food insecurity. So don't go anywhere.
Welcome back to the 26 at 6 United Way of Southwest Michigan show that brings you 26 stories in 26 weeks. Now, here's your host, President of the United Way of Southwest Michigan, Anna Murphy.
Welcome back to the show. I'm now joined by Linda Stroll, Executive Director of Senior Nutrition Services and Meals on Wheels of Southwest Michigan. Linda, nice to see you.
Nice to be here. Thanks, Anna.
So, I like to start the show a little bit so that people get to know who I'm talking with. You've been the executive director there now. How long?
I just finished my 7th year.
Wow. It's been 7 years.
Yeah.
What did you do before that? How did you get to senior nutrition and kind of what was your path?
Well, it was pretty indirect, to be perfectly honest with you. Originally, I planned to be a medical social worker and get my MSW after I finished college, but I started working in a nursing department at a hospital, and then I sent my resume to a friend. It went awry, and I was called in to the office of a brokerage firm and hadn't had an interview there.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
And became a stockbroker and a financial planner.
Interesting.
Before leaving to become a business manager for entertainment people in Los Angeles. I left that and decided to sort of go back to what my original idea was. So I started working at a mental health center and set up a fundraising department for them. My last job in California was at a Meals on Wheels.
Okay.
So, and so this is very familiar and very, very dear to my heart, honestly.
That's interesting. What I've learned over the last several weeks that we've done this, there's a lot of paths that are very similar to other people. And, you know, Ryan in our office was working in the entertainment industry in Los Angeles as well. Yes. Isn't that, that's just kind of crazy similar things, you know?
You've got two Angelinos working in your office.
I know. Wow. Well, we're glad to have you here. And tonight we're going to talk about food insecurities, but we're going to talk about your program and what it does for the community. So can you talk a little bit about what Meals on Wheels is? And I think we need to talk about what Senior Nutrition Services is and Meals on Wheels, because for a long time it was just Senior Nutrition Services and then you took on the other piece of it. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, Senior Nutrition Services has been in business, if you will, for 30 years. And we have two major programs. One are the hot meals that we provide at the senior centers in Barry and Cass and Van Buren counties. And the second one, which is the much better known, is the traditional Meals on Wheels program, which is delivering meals to homebound seniors in Barry and Van Buren counties. About 5 years ago, we decided to get the DBA of Meals on Wheels of Southwest Michigan because we felt it better described what we do.
Okay.
And it's really raised awareness that there is such a program and that there are resources for seniors in our area.
So you had been doing the home delivery, but just not under that name.
Correct.
Okay, I understand. Right. How many seniors do you serve?
In the congregate program at the senior centers, we serve 66,000 meals to 1,100 seniors. And in the Meals on Wheels program, we delivered 144,284 meals to 765 homebound seniors.
And you said that was Berrien and
Van Buren.
And Van Buren, okay.
And those are all our programs across all the programs.
And how many senior centers are you in?
12.
Okay, interesting. You call Meals on Wheels the senior meal trifecta. What does that mean?
Well, we do three things. We deliver a nutritious meal. Our drivers make a point of visiting with the senior every day because we know that probably it's the only person they actually see on a daily basis. And then they also check on their health and welfare.
So what are some of the things that they're looking for? Or do they have to be specially trained to do that? Or is it just more of a, I'm seeing something that's different than the day before and I need to talk about that a little bit?
Because the drivers deliver to the same people every day, they get to know them. And so they can spot when things are unusual. If someone who usually comes to the door doesn't, then we call. And if they still don't answer, then we go and we call their emergency contact.
Okay.
And we may walk around the house to check to see that they're not outside or something like that. So it's they know them so well that they can spot unusual occurrences.
Sure. We'll come back in just a moment and finish our conversation. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to United Way of Southwest Michigan's 26 at 6. And we're talking with Linda Stroll from Senior Nutrition Services and Meals on Wheels. So we're talking about, that Meals on Wheels is kind of that trifecta, and that the folks that are delivering the meals are not just delivering a meal. They're also somewhat kind of eyes and ears for the senior population that are still in their home, making sure that they're safe and being able to identify things that are out of the ordinary for them. So it's kind of like those sunshine calls, you know, that I've heard that people do, that we're just going to call seniors today and make sure that they answer the phone and see how things are.
Right.
You mentioned that Meals on Wheels is not just an income-based program and that you're a needs-based program. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Unlike many of the federal programs, there is no income limit to get Meals on Wheels. The criteria is that someone be 60 or older, homebound, not able to shop or cook for themselves, and or be the caregiver of someone who is 60 or older.
Interesting.
So a husband, because we know the challenges that caregivers have, the husband and wife, for example, can both get meals in a household. And we serve people, we deliver meals to the Bluff, people who live in the houses over the Bluff in Silver Beach, and in Benton Harbor, in rural, in urban. We're sort of delivering, in many cases, to the seniors who sort of aged out of ALICE in the sense that they're no longer working, they're no longer employed.
Right. Right.
But no less in need of services.
So my husband and I have my mother-in-law that lives with us. Right. She's well over 60.
Yes.
She's 87.
Ah.
And with dementia. And she has caregivers there. Would we be able to access this for her?
Of course. Of course.
Interesting.
As long as the caregivers are not paid to cook for her.
Okay.
Certainly. We could certainly deliver meals to her.
Yeah, I'm not paid to cook for
her. Right.
And
you are the bologna in the sandwich, in the sense that if you have children, but the people who have children and are also trying to take care of a grandparent or a great-grandparent, and take care of their children, it's a huge job. And that's where we can step in and take some of that stress off the family.
So without mentioning names, do you have a story that you can tell us that, you know, talk about how maybe a client that you've had on Meals on Wheels and how it impacts that person?
Well, I have sort of a favorite one because it shows a number of different ways that people access Meals on Wheels. We had a client who had lost 30 pounds or so. He was depressed. He wasn't eating. He had run his own business, but had shut the business down. And he was in and out of the hospital. And so the doctor finally said, I think maybe Meals on Wheels would be helpful. He was a real gourmet cook, so I was not quite sure that this was going to fly very well. But he started getting the meals, found he adored the meals and adored the driver.
Oh.
So he put on about 15 pounds. He stabilized. He was able to go off the program. And then later on, because of additional health problems, he came on the program and stayed in it until the end. And he was always so grateful. And always had a piece of chocolate.
Oh, that's awesome.
For the driver. So it's they're
it's
very
the relationship.
Grateful. It was the relationship.
Yeah, and that's what helped him. So how can someone learn more about the services that you provide?
You can call 269-925-0137, or you can visit our website at www.snsmeals.org.
Well, I want to thank you, Linda Stroll, for stopping in tonight and talking about the program, Senior Nutrition Services and Meals on Wheels. When we come back, we're going to talk to Patty Jean McCahill from Feeding America of West Michigan to continue our conversation on food insecurity. So don't go away.
Welcome back to the 26 at 6 United Way of Southwest Michigan show that brings you 26 stories in 26 weeks. Now, here's your host, President of the United Way of Southwest Michigan, Anna Murphy.
Welcome back to tonight's show focused on food insecurity. We're joined in the studio by Patty Jean McCahill from Feeding America of West Michigan. And I am glad that you are super happy to be here. I want you to talk a little bit about yourself, because you've not been on the show, have you?
No.
Okay.
This is my first time.
I want listeners to get to know you. So I want you to talk about a little who you are. What path did you take? How'd you end up where you are?
Yeah. So I've had a really diverse career. And I like to say I had a course correction at about 45 and switched from the corporate sector, where for 20 years I was in brand management and strategy and marketing, to I went back to graduate school to get my master's in public administration to learn about the nonprofit sector, and have been with Feeding America West Michigan for 3 years.
Well, that's awesome. And we're glad that you are. So, you said you've been with Feeding America now for 3 years. What's your role there?
I am the marketing and development director. So I work on all of our brand communications, as well as grant writing and fundraising.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what Feeding America of West Michigan does for those listeners that may not know.
Sure. So Feeding America is a food bank. And that is basically, we are the provider, the single largest hunger relief organization in the 40 counties that we serve in West Michigan in the Upper Peninsula.
And that's like half the state.
That is half the state. Okay. There are 83 counties. So we have a huge service area, and we have three distribution centers. Down here in Benton Harbor, we're on Empire Avenue, and we've been in the area for 20 years. So we really understand the community here. Then we have a distribution center in Comstock Park, and then also in Cadillac, Michigan. But importantly, a food bank is very different than a food pantry. So we are a very large organization. We move about, we bring in about 30 million pounds of food a year, and we distribute that amount of food each year.
Where do you bring the food in from?
So the food comes in from farmers. The Southwest has incredible agriculture and very generous farmers. So they donate all of their produce, their excess produce or off-specification produce. We get donations from retailers like Meijer and Costco. Okay. We get donations from branded manufacturers such as Kellogg Company. And then we also get product from, we buy some product and we get some product from the USDA.
Interesting. So the product from the USDA, is that, what kind of product is that?
Those are overrun commodity products. So we get flour, or we'll get tomato sauce or prunes. It's all really good product, but it's all shelf stable.
Okay. And that's
the majority of it is shelf stable.
But that's what commodity is.
Yes.
I mean, that's okay. I'm just trying to make sure that we define the terms.
Yes.
Because not everyone knows our lingo.
That's correct.
So
we distribute to over 900 agencies. And in Berrien County, we have 69 agencies.
Okay.
So Linda, who was just on, is an agency of ours.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So food pantries get product from us, congregate feeding sites, senior centers,
okay,
and soup kitchens.
Okay.
Is another example.
So what do you have statistics that you can talk about of, you know, how many, because we're talking about food insecurities. Do we know how many families are food insecure?
We do.
In Michigan, Southwest Michigan?
I have Berrien and Cass County
okay.
with me.
Perfect.
So food insecurity, as we define it, is a lack of access to food to live a healthy life. So food insecure people they may skip a meal, they may dilute food, they may eat unhealthy food because it's high in calorie, but we've got a lot of people in Southwest Michigan that are food insecure. The food insecurity rate in Berrien County is almost 15%.
Wow.
And our service area is about 12.2%. And then Cass County is right at 12%. But in terms of households, you've got about 23,000 households in Berrien County and 6,000 in Cass County that need our services.
And again, our population in Berrien and Cass is about
203,
something
like that.
We're going to come back in just a moment and finish our conversation.
Okay.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to United Way of Southwest Michigan's 26 at 6. And we are talking with Patty Jean McCahill from Feeding America of West Michigan. So let's, we're starting to talk about what food insecurities is, and you said it's the lack of access. It can be, and help me understand this, it's a lack of access, not only self-imposed lack of access, but just lack of access around us.
Yeah. So for example, there are things called food deserts.
Okay.
Right. And a food desert is where there's a void in grocery stores. So people in Benton Harbor, for example, there are no grocery stores.
So where are they getting their food from?
Well, they're going offsite, so they may be traveling to Meijer, or they're going to the corner gas station. And there are a number of people that are spending a lot of money at grocery stores to try to get, at gas stations and corner stores, liquor stores, for
sure.
example, to get food.
Well, and I would assume that when there's food insecurities, it's also an implication on our health.
Absolutely.
Which increases.
Yeah. So the intersection of hunger and health is really tight. And one of the things that we know is there's a measure of health, and it's called the mortality mm-hmm. rate. So mortality rates are deaths per 100,000 people. And we know in Benton Harbor that the mortality rate is double that of the state average.
Do you know what those averages are? We'll get that. We'll put it on the website. We'll find out what the state is, and we'll find out what our counties
yeah,
are.
Yeah, I have so, that. I just okay. don't have it off
That's
the top
fine.
Of my head.
That's fine. So let's talk about what impact do you think Feeding America makes in our communities?
Well, as Rachel had discussed earlier, people... access to food is one of the simplest things that we can do to provide family stability. And we do that on not only through providing food to agencies, but also through our mobile food pantry. And what our mobile food pantry is we come with anywhere from 5,000 pounds of food to 30,000 pounds of food, and it's disproportionately perishable. So the produce, protein, and dairy that you need to live a healthy life is, generally speaking, is always on a mobile, along with some other food. But that gives people easy access. It gives them about 50 pounds of food. It's a nice supplement to what they're currently doing, and it provides family stability.
We're going to go on site and talk to our folks from a mobile pantry.
Nice.
A mobile this evening. And so we're going to talk more about that with,
right.
I think there's a driver that goes and sets them up, and he's going to talk to
yes.
us about that.
And he's very, big personality, and the our neighbors in need love him.
They do. I don't know what it is, but everyone will understand what that means in a little bit. But I want to talk a little bit about something that I've been a part of, and I'm hearing some buzz about, and it's this community food center or plate place or something like that. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So the concept of a community food center is a different way of improving the food environment. It's basically a very small footprint grocery store, but the difference is that it's a membership base, and members pay $10 a month to gain access to the food, but more importantly, we're going to be providing wraparound services. So we talked about the interaction of health and hunger, and so some of the services that we'll be having are diabetes classes, we'll be having weight management, we're going to have a community garden, we're going to teach people how to cook.
It's a holistic approach.
It's a very holistic 360-degree view of health and hunger.
And we're really at the beginning planning of some of that. So we've done some community conversations.
We have, and importantly, there's an opportunity for community members to voice their opinions of
the town halls
coming up. There's one October 18th at the library from 5:30 to 7, and then there's one October 30th from 5:30 to 7 at Connexus.
Well, we'll make sure that those get on the website as well. And I want to thank you, Patty Jean McCahill, for being here from Feeding America. In the next segment, I'll be visiting New Troy and talking with the mobile coordinator of the mobile food pantry. So stick around.
Welcome back to the 26 at 6 United Way of Southwest Michigan show that brings you 26 stories in 26 weeks. Now, here's your host, President of the United Way of Southwest Michigan, Anna Murphy.
Welcome back to our show tonight, focused on food insecurity. And because of weather tonight, we're taking this inside, and I'm excited to be here to chat with Rick Murphy. Rick Murphy is the mobile pantry coordinator for Feeding America, and in an earlier segment, we talked to Patty Jean about what Feeding America is. I'm excited to have you here, Rick. And for the record, you can say hello.
Hello.
And for the record, Rick and I are married. We're like a team. So it's kind of fun to have you on the radio.
As usual, it's good to be with you.
Oh, that's so sweet. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the mobile pantries. Patty Jean talked about what Feeding America does. Mm-hmm. What specifically is a mobile pantry?
Well, I think to summarize it briefly, it's a farmer's market on wheels. What we try to do is get fresh produce into the community. So we actually drive it into the community via truck, and then we stop at various locations and distribute the produce. A lot of it is potatoes, squash, retail produce that we receive through donations from Meijer and Walmart.
Well, and we are in such an agricultural area that we have great access to fruits and vegetables. So during the seasons, you get seasonal fruits and vegetables, because I know you've had apples and peaches and things like that as well.
Right. We get watermelons from Kurlikowski Farms, and we'll get apples from Hillside Orchards in Berrien Springs. We get peaches from Dutchman Orchards up in South Haven. So, yeah, there are various farms that donate depending on what the seasonal item is.
So when you get a call that, so we're going to go into kind of like take us into the day of a mobile pantry excursion. Mm-hmm. So you get the call that there's a need for one. What happens from the point you get that call to the point where the people are actually getting the food?
Well, a lot of the mobile food pantries that we do are scheduled ahead of time. It's pretty rare that we just get a call to go do a mobile food pantry. So we have a lot of locations that are already pre-scheduled. We'll do some locations actually once a month.
Okay.
So what we need to understand about the pantry is that what is the size or the amount of food that we need to bring into that particular location?
who determines that? Is that you or
well,
is that the...
We look at it for, based on some just our own anecdotal experience. There's really not a whole lot of scientific data behind it, although there is an increasing amount of data that we're capturing now. But typically, a mobile food pantry will serve anywhere from 100 to 150 people. We do some that serve as few as 60 people, but those are pretty rare. So for the most part, it's for 100 people, we would take a 5,000-pound truck.
Okay.
And within that truck, we would have, say, 1,000 pounds of potatoes, which essentially amounts to 10-pound bags of potatoes.
Oh, so.
One each for 100 people.
Okay.
And then we would bring enough beverage to where a particular client would receive a gallon of whatever that might be, milk, orange juice, some type of fruit juice, maybe iced tea, depending on what we have available. So then we would add to the truck pounds of, say, cabbage, maybe cucumbers, tomatoes. This time of year, we've had watermelon, carrots. So we mix all those various things up on the truck to feed 100 people. And then we try to be within the 5,000-pound range on the truck. So it's 5,000 pounds, maybe plus 5 to 10%.
And that, and I know that you can get trucks in different sizes.
Correct.
So it's just all depending on the who's ever hosting it, because an organization will host it, and it depends on how many they think they're going to serve. Is basically
correct, yes.
Okay. And in what areas are you? Is the mobile pantry going to?
In Southwest Michigan, we serve Berrien, Cass, and Van Buren counties.
Okay.
So that really our territory then covers. Anywhere from South Haven through Bangor, Pawpaw down south to Marcellus.
Wow, okay.
Over west to New Buffalo, and then a lot of communities in between.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to United Way of Southwest Michigan's 26 at 6, and we are talking with Rick Murphy from Feeding America. He is the mobile food coordinator for Feeding America, and we're just talking about their service area, which is basically Southwest Michigan, Berrien, Cass, and Van Buren counties. And so do you know how many mobiles you do in a year? Or is that a trick question?
No, that's not a trick question. I mean, Our prime time really starts in about April and then ends, I would say, in December by the time we get our schedule full. So you have a solid 9 months there where we're doing, I'd say, 16 to 18 mobiles per month. And so I guess if you do the math on that, that you're, you know, talking well over 150 mobiles. January and February, March tend to be fairly light months for us due to the weather conditions. But yeah, I'd say we could do at least 180 to 200 mobiles a year.
Have you ever tracked how many miles you do in a year?
No, I have never. Never.
Well, I think you should do that. I think that would be interesting to see how many miles you did in a year. So if you, you know, you've been doing this how long?
Going on a full 4 years now.
So what are some of the observations you've made, with people coming to the pantries? Or do people come to the same pantries? Let me ask this a different way. Do the same people go to multiple pantries? And, you know, are you seeing repeat visits and that
sure.
type of thing?
Yeah. There's a lot. There's a handful of people that will come to as many as they possibly can, depending on where the location is. Usually the closer in and around the Benton Harbor, St. Joe area, the more people you'll see more often. So when we travel to Bridgman or to Stevensville or Coloma, you'll see a lot of the same people going to those mobiles. It varies depending on the situation. Some people need emergency food, so, you know, you might see them for a while and then, you know, their needs have been met and you won't see them. I've never really looked at any of the data as far as, you know, the...
How often they're...
Yeah, the actual people that are coming to these mobiles by name, but we're not real concerned about the name. We just want to get the food out to the people that need it.
So when you set up a mobile, how are the people getting the food? Are they volunteers? Are they staff? Who's actually handing the food out to them?
Well, typically, when we go to a church, the church will have a group of volunteers that will coordinate that mobile. So my job typically is to bring the food to that particular church, and then that coordinator will work with me in determining how much of each particular item to distribute. And then I can kind of give them how to best lay it out on the tables. We provide 6 tables, 3 on each side of the truck. And then we can kind of work out the logistics on how they want to distribute that food. And then it's up to them
to make sure it's managed.
Yes. The coordinating of the mobiles at the pantries or at the particular mobile food pantry sites is not really a Feeding America responsibility.
Okay. It's the host.
Host and their volunteers.
And just for listeners, we've said host a couple times. That's who's actually purchasing the mobile, if you will, or granting, or at least getting the mobile somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Correct.
So we've got to wrap up. This goes really fast. 10-minute segments are really short, it seems. But you and I have talked before on several occasions, and I think this work is somewhat meaningful to you. Is there something that you can share with listeners just to, you know, from your perspective about food insecurity or the need for food or the mobiles or just the whole experience?
Well, I think one of the things I've learned is that, you know, there are a lot of people in every community that have to depend on this particular food that they get to meet a variety of different needs. And those needs vary from, for senior citizens, it might be just a fixed income that helps them make ends meet. Or it might be just a large family that's having difficulties either with unemployment or low income. But I think for the most part, it just really helps people meet their budgetary needs.
Well, I really appreciate you doing the work that you do. Our communities appreciate that. And I know that Feeding America does, because I've heard that the folks that go to the pantries love the mobile food driver. You're awesome. On behalf of United Way of Southwest Michigan, I'd like to thank all of our guests who joined us this evening to talk about food insecurity. United Way fights for the health, education, and financial stability of every person in Southwest Michigan. Thanks for joining the fight.
Join us Tuesday night for the United Way of Southwest Michigan's 26 at 6 on News Talk 94.9 WSJM.